Hey, Deserving listeners, a lot of you have been asking that I react to the video of Steven Crowder verbally abusing his wife. So, full disclosure, I had never heard of him until y'all started emailing me about this, and so I thought I would watch the Young Turks on YouTube provide at least an introduction for me and maybe for some of you. So let's watch their coverage. They're going to introduce this, I think.
Right-wing commentator Steven Crowder, who seems to be as toxic as he is publicly in private.
Okay, so I'm learning that he is a right-wing commentator.
In private, with people like his wife, with people like his pregnant wife. Disturbing video was obtained by journalist Yasher Ali, and it reveals that the commentator Steven Crowder is berating his wife, and this apparently is one instance of...
Okay, so we're learning that someone sent a journalist a video of the two of them, I believe.
Of what we later found out was many. In this one clip, it's from June of 2021, and his wife Hillary is 8 months pregnant. This is after a week where Steven Crowder announced that he and his wife were getting a divorce.
Okay, so I'm trying to catalog all the details that... This is in 2021, June of 2021, and the video was taken then, and this was around the time that they were getting a divorce. Okay, I found the video on Yasher Ali's Substack. Let's watch that. Obviously, this carries with it a trigger warning. Seriously, I don't know what we're going to see, but I'm going to guess that it could trigger some of you and your PTSD, so don't watch this if you think you're going to be triggered by it and harmed.
I drew a boundary. I drew a boundary. No, you just did it. I drew a boundary of abusive and cruel. You were not taking the car.
So this is in the middle of the conversation, so I'm having a hard time understanding. Maybe we'll get some context, but he's saying he's drawing a boundary. I'm also guessing that the video was leaked by her because this is a security camera that they have at their home, looks like, 2 years ago in 2021. And maybe she leaked it as a way to try to out him or something. I don't know.
I drew a boundary. I drew a boundary. No, you just did it. I drew a boundary of abusive and cruel. You were not taking the car. Because if you refuse to do wifely things, then I will go pick up the groceries.
There's no groceries. I do have
steaks, wood pellets, my grill. I know it's not a...
I've been a couple therapist for 25 years, so I am very familiar with couples who are fighting verbally with each other, and this has the tone and the look of that. I'm guessing there was a ramp up to this. Each person, or at least one person, was being hurt or something. I don't know. But it sounds like he's saying you can't take the car because you're not doing your wifely things. I don't know what that means. It certainly doesn't sound like a good indication. I don't know. I'm going to take a guess and say that a lot of people don't like this Steven Crowder individual, but I'm trying to reserve judgment until I see something that indicates that I should be judging something.
But I'll go do it. How about you first?
Okay, how do you respect men? All right. Now, if this was a couple that I was working with, and I've heard statements like this in session before, usually I would stop where the conversation is going and I would focus on him and I would say, when you say respect men, what exactly are you trying to get at? And we might explore sexism and misogyny. We might explore what he is trying to get at. Usually when men are doing this, it's because they're hurt deep down. It doesn't mean you have to have sympathy for them. It's a triangulation. You've heard me talk about triangulation. When there is conflict between two people, the lower the differentiation level, meaning the lower the maturity, the lower the emotional intelligence, that kind of thing, lower the coping skills, the couple or one person will triangulate a third element. So you might triangulate a friend by saying, hey, you can't believe what my husband did, or you might triangulate society. That's what he's doing. He is saying there is this rule in society, I think this is what he's getting at, that says you must respect men because you're a woman, you're lesser. And so I don't know how to deal with this conflict. I've tried to deal with it. I don't know how to deal with it, or I'm guessing, because usually you don't triangulate third elements, especially in this way, unless you feel like you have no idea what you're doing and you're at your wit's end, so to speak. And so he is pulling in society and saying, I have society on my side. Everyone agrees. And maybe even she has agreed in the past. I don't know. I don't know her politics. He is trying to pull that in as an attempt to win the argument, to get her, I'm guessing, to say something like, well, yeah, I guess you're right that women are lesser and men are superior and I need to respect men. So, okay, you win, which, of course, I don't think is going to work. And more generally speaking, in couple conflict, we will do this. You've done this. I've done this. We've all done this. When we get into these kinds of conversations, everyone's trying to win. And when everyone's trying to win, everyone loses.
How about you first? Hillary, how do you respect a man? Yes, I don't mean that. I mean that. You see, the love of
respect.
No, no. I don't mean that. No, you're not taking the
cup.
You're not taking the cup. You are not.
Then I will ask them to pick me up.
He's saying you are not taking the car. It's just hard to know what the context here is, but the way it looks is that he is controlling her. He's saying that she wants to go somewhere, it looks like, and he's saying you can't take the car. I don't know. There's so many question marks. Certainly his tone is in the direction of verbal abuse. There's indications of abuse. It could be much worse than it looks, honestly. But if I were to take a guess, I would say that there was an escalation in the fight, and he could be all to blame for that. I don't know. But there's a ramp up to this, and he is, in his way, and I've treated lots of couples with this kind of toxicity, in his very twisted way, I'm guessing he's trying to make up with her, meaning that he's trying to establish some kind of closeness, some kind of indication that she won't leave him. And the fact that she wants to leave the house, maybe because she has to run an errand, or maybe because she wants to get away from him, I don't know. He perceives this as a rejection or potential loss of some kind, and he's getting desperate. Abusive people, in my experience, and I've treated many perpetrators who were court mandated because they broke a law. They were sentenced in a court of law that they had committed a crime, and they were mandated to come to my group, a group that I was running with other colleagues. And I learned firsthand the mindset of abusive people, particularly abusive men. And I learned over time that although it was a very twisted set of behaviors, very abusive, criminal, upsetting, destructive group of behaviors, at the foundation of it all, they were actually trying to retain closeness, which is bizarre when you think about the behavior, but that's usually the case. So I don't know, but that's just my guess, is that he, in a very twisted way, doesn't want her to leave because, you know, if his inner child, so to speak, could talk, I'm guessing that child would say something like, I'm really hurt by everything that's been happening lately, and I'm worried about our relationship, and it's been rough lately, and if you leave, I'm going to be very sad and worried, so can you please not leave?
I'm taking the car. You are not taking the car.
Then I will ask them to pick me up. Would you like me to ask?
Oh, that's right.
It's not a threat, Steven.
So then she's like, well, then I'll ask him to pick me up. So it sounds like she's meeting up with someone. And then he says, is that a threat? It looks like he doesn't want her to leave, imprisoning her in his house. That's what it looks like.
No, I don't mean to. No, you're not taking the
car.
You're not taking the car.
Steven,
you are not.
Then I will ask them to pick me up. Would you like me to ask?
Oh, that's
right. It's not a
threat, Steven. Get an Uber.
Okay, Stephen, I can't.
Feeling some constraints?
Stephen.
Like, I can't
Stephen.
Go. Listen to me. You want to walk out right now? Listen to me. I can't go to the gym. I can't go to my parents. I can't call my friends. I can't be home. You're going to take the car and leave me here. Hillary, just think of how boxed in you've made me.
Oh, he's saying take an Uber because I don't want you to take our one car because I don't want to be boxed in because I don't understand what they're talking about. It is. Maybe y'all know. I don't know. There's just a certain. Okay. I'll just keep watching.
What do you need me to pick up? I'll get it. I'll be back when I'm back.
No, that doesn't work either. You'll be back when you're back. That doesn't work either.
See,
do you understand the difference between my life being set to the second and you're going, I'll be back when I'm back?
Student.
The only way out of it is discipline and respect.
Yeah, there's so many questions, but there's words in here like respecting men, and the only way out of this is discipline and respect. She is trying, the tone of her voice, the way she's talking, I'm going to take a guess and say that she's being nice and accommodating and he is not. There's so many questions. Take it from me, as someone who has had couples come into my office in the middle of a conversation like this, and I have the opportunity to drill down on these issues, at least for that session, maybe even for months in the future, we can really drill down on the details and I can understand where people are coming from. So take it from me that just seeing this clip, I don't know if we know anything. Maybe it'll escalate here. Certainly the things that he said thus far raise some major red flags, the tone here, but I don't know. When we saw the Amaranth video, that was so much more apparent. Plus the audio quality was better, so there's that. But in the Amaranth video, it was longer, there was much more detail. That one you could absolutely say some things, but I don't know. This one's harder to decipher.
It's the only way out of it, or we're at an impasse.
We are at an impasse.
Good. Because you can't have any discipline or respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. You throw your hand, you give up so easily.
I don't give up, Stephen.
You give up so easily. I just said the only way out of this is discipline and respect. And you said, then we're at an impasse.
Stephen, no, we are.
Okay, so she's saying we're at an impasse. And I see this through my lens, which is typically couples coming to me asking for help. Couples don't come to me asking me, well, sometimes they do, asking me to determine who's right and who's wrong. But that's not often very helpful. I mean, sometimes we can talk about, well, you know, in this instance, I think you're the one that's a little more in the wrong. But we can't start off like that because I'll alienate that individual and they won't ever come back. So I have to start more general. And we have to talk about what's going to help. And so that's my job. That's what I'm trained to do. That's what my clinical skills are in. I'm not trained to watch a security camera in the middle of a fight and understand what's happening. But again, it doesn't look good for him. And I wonder if, because he's a right-wing pundit, if this has become a bigger story. I've received so many requests to watch this. And yeah, maybe it'll escalate. So maybe I need to. Oh, but anyway, my point is that she is starting to say we're at an impasse. And I think the message, either intended or unintended to him, is I'm done, meaning that there's no use in continuing to have this conversation. And I'm guessing, given the tone of this, that she has run into this many, many times. She's had many conversations with him along these lines and has learned that it's just best to cut your losses and get out of the conversation. She says we're at an impasse. I'll rewind it because he says some very quintessential things that I've seen in my office before or heard described in my office. You know, they'll talk about a fight they had the night before. And the things he's saying is, oh, so you're just going to give up. That is a signal that he doesn't want her to leave and he doesn't want her to give up. He wants to stay in this relationship. He's trying. It's not working. And he's not listening. And his message is respect and discipline. And you need to understand that you're subservient to me. You can't do what you want. I mean, that seems to be the messaging from him, which shouldn't surprise us given his politics, right? So I want to be clear. I'm not justifying it. I'm not even coming close to justifying it. I am condemning it 100%. And if we're going to understand, as I need to understand in order to treat people, I need to understand where it generates from. Sometimes it generates from psychopathy or what the internet will call sociopath. But psychopathy, sociopathy, antisocial, lack of empathy does exist in the world. And there's a small percentage of individuals that have that problem. But usually that's not the case. Usually where this abusive behavior comes from is because it was learned, it was taught to them, and the individual is having a really hard time establishing attachment security. And so they resort to abusive tactics to retain or to obtain attachment security, but it's fake, right? Because when someone is dominated and coerced into being close to you, it's not actual closeness. They're just terrified of leaving you. And then the individual who's abusive continues to feel aggravated because they're not getting the closeness they're seeking, but they're just shooting themselves in the foot. Meanwhile, they're abusing everyone around them. And so what I do with these individuals is I try to teach them all this and help them. And it's not easy, but I try to point them in a direction where they can actually get their needs met. And then when they actually do that, they don't need to resort to what they were taught when they were young to engage in abusive, misogynistic behavior. And it takes time, but I've done it many, many times and it works. So that's what I see. I don't know if that's what is happening, but anyway, so I think she has run into this a lot. And she's trying to get away, but she's staying around. So I'm guessing that she's worried that if she just walks off, because I think that's what she wants to do, because I think she literally has somewhere to go, that it will escalate for him and he will become worse. And so that's what it looks like. It looks like she is thinking in her mind, okay, there's no sense in continuing this because he's dug in and he's putting me down. I want to get away, but if I just bolt when he's like this, when I get back, it could be 100 times worse.
It's discipline worse. It's the only way out of it, or we're at an impact.
We are at an impasse.
Good. Because you can't have any discipline worse.
Yeah.
There you go. You throw your hand, you give up so easily.
I don't give up so easily.
You give up so easily.
We saw this with Amaranth in that video, and I've seen it many times clinically and personally, but there's this weird flip-flopping that abusive people will exhibit. And it, with the Amaranth video, it was much more apparent because we had much more data. But I think we just saw it a little bit here where he's like, well, fine. If you can't have any discipline or respect, then we're at an impasse. And then she agrees. She says, well, then I guess we're at an impasse because what? I'm not going to be submissive to you. I'm not going to give in to you all the time. And then she's like, well, I guess I'm at an impasse. And then he flip-flops to you give up so easily. It's weird. It can have a gaslighting effect. It can have a crazy-making effect. But where the individual is coming from is they're doing whatever they can in their way to establish control because they equate control and power and getting someone to be submissive with attachment security. They are desperate to get to that place. You might even, and I've done this before with abusive people, I will actually in the office establish actual closeness where they're not in power and control. And because of their upbringing and their life, they actually don't perceive it as closeness at first because it looks so foreign to them. Throughout their life, perhaps modeled in their own parents' behavior, the only time there was ever any amount emotional closeness or security, even though it's just a shred of it and it's fake anyway, was when someone was dominating another person and the other person was being submissive. So the goal of the conversation is that it doesn't matter how you get there. You're just trying to oppose. You're trying to break the other person down. You don't even need to have a coherent argument. That's why this, from the outside, and maybe from the inside, if you're her, I think her name is Hillary, that you'll perceive this flip-flopping and you will even maybe bring it up to the abusive person. You're like, wait, didn't you just say? But the abusive person is not interested in having a rational conversation. They're only interested in power and control. That's all they're looking for. And when you finally give up the power to the other person and you submit, then they can relax and then they will maybe even warm up to you. So it has this training effect on the abused individual that, you know, just submit because if the sooner you get it over with, the better. The sooner you can get rid of the abuse, the better. So just do whatever you need to do to get rid of the abuse. And that just means you just submit. Even though in your mind, you might not be really submitting, you rinse and repeat that over time. Eventually, you start to convince yourself you are submissive, you are stupid, you don't have a good way of judging reality because the abusive person has beaten that into your skull. So I think we're seeing some of that dynamic here.
The only way out of it is discipline and respect. It's the only way out of it, or we're at an impact.
So he says, the only way out of this is discipline and respect. I don't know what he means by that. I'm guessing it means you will do what I say. And just the body language too, he's just like sitting down and she's trying to get away, but she keeps coming back. And so he's saying, the only way out of it is discipline and respect. And if you can't do it, then we're at an impasse, he says. He might even be using her word that she has used against him in previous conversations. I don't know. It just has that look to it. And then watch what she says. Well, then I guess we're at an impasse. And then he flip-flops and says, but hey, you know, you're giving up so easily.
The only way out of it is discipline and respect. It's the only way out of it, or we're at an impasse.
We are at an impasse.
Good. Because you can't have any discipline or respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. You throw your hand. You give up so easily.
I don't give up so easily.
You give up so easily. I just said the only.
And the nefarious nature of being victimized by someone like this is that you believe that you're dealing with someone that's rational, that if you just convince them of your point of view or your feelings, then the abusive person will say, oh, you know what, maybe, or they'll be influenced. You know, with other people, non-abusive people, that's often how it works. Not always, but that often is at least possible. To the abusive person, nothing is possible. You cannot convince them. The only thing, like I said, that will get them to shut up is if you submit. And you have to do it very noticeably, and you have to do it very convincingly. That's the only thing that will get them to stop arguing with you, typically. So we saw that in the Amaranth video very much. So I think that's what we're seeing. You know, she's stopping. She says, no, I don't give up. That's not me. And if I were a little birdie on her shoulder, if I understand the situation correctly, which God knows, I would say, you're wasting your breath. You're trying to argue with him. You're trying to make your point, but he's just using words. And that's important. If you're ever being victimized by someone like this, currently or past or future, you have to really drill into your head that there's no convincing them until the perpetrator gets treatment and really starts to work on their issues. And that can take years, by the way. Until that happens, there's no convincing them. There's no point in trying to convince them. In fact, often to the abusive person, they'll take you arguing with them as opposed to you having an impasse and getting in your car and driving away. They would rather have you there and have a conversation with you, even though it's very contentious, than to lose you, because their attachment insecurity is so great that they would rather have some of you, even though you're fighting, than to have not none of you, meaning that you are driving away and potentially leaving them in your mind and in your body.
The only way out of this is discipline or respect. You said, then we're at an impasse.
Steven, no, we are at an impasse, okay? I love you, but Steven, your abuse is sick. Your abuse.
Watch it.
Okay, so we're seeing more here that she's saying your abuse is sick. All right, that gives me some indication that this has been going on for a while, that she either knows from her own experience and education and awareness, or she's talked with other people who have said, that's abusive. What you're telling me, what your husband is doing, that's abusive. I don't know. But she has the resolve to say this. In order to say this, I'm guessing this has been going on for years, maybe even since the beginning of their relationship. And so that's what it tells me. And then he's saying, watch it. That's a threat, right? Discipline, he's talked about. Respect, tell me about your disrespect of men, his body language, the flip-flopping, him saying, watch it. Watch what, buddy? What is it? Now, is he physically abusive? I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know what the allegations are, but, and I'm pretty sure that doesn't happen in a video like this because I've just heard that it was a verbal abuse example. But let's rewind this and really break it down.
I just said the only way out of this is discipline and respect. You said, then we're at an impasse.
Steven, no, we are at an impasse, okay? I love you.
Right. She says, okay, I love you. And that's another sign that she's a victim because she's trying to get away, I'm thinking. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the beginning of their relationship, when he would do this sort of thing, she would give in and submit. And this is a very common story that at first she was confused. She thought, well, maybe it was my fault. Maybe he's just in a bad mood. Then over time, it might have become worse. And then she became more confused. Like, is there something wrong with him? Is there something wrong with me? I don't know. And then ways of trying to deal with it, ways of trying to manage it. Maybe if I did this, maybe if we had a kid, it would help. Maybe if we took a vacation, a lot of accommodation, a lot of problem solving, a lot of searching for an answer. And then eventually she gets support. She is starting to hear from other people, might have even had other recordings that she reviewed, maybe showed other people, I don't know, and said, like, what do you think about this? And they're like, that's abusive. And then she's like, really? Is that? Well, what is that? But no, maybe, because she married him for a reason, right? Because she loved him and she wanted to be in a relationship with him. So that's a hard pill to swallow, right? To realize that you're married to an abusive person. The father of your child or children is an abusive person. And what do you do about that? It's hard to cope with, right? So maybe some negotiation in her mind. Eventually, though, she lands on, he's abusive. Okay, I need to talk with him about it. And I'm guessing that this is not the first time that she has brought it up with him. Maybe even when he's in a good mood, she's like, hey, we need to go to a couple therapy, or I don't know. And I'm just going to take a guess and say they didn't go over with him. And so then we get to this point. I think they divorce around this time. She's starting to want to leave him, and she is wanting to take the car out. I don't know the context. And then the conversation is escalating, and she knows all the signs. She's been over it in her mind many times of, yeah, this is how it starts. These are the things that he says. This is the typical way in which he tries to gain control. This is the only way out of the conversation. So what's my next step? Well, I'm not going to take it anymore because I've tried so many other things in the past to try to stop it, to try to convince him or to try to manage it. It just gets worse over time. I'm completely powerless over the situation. So I can protect myself, and I've maybe talked with other people and they've said, you know, you just leave, just get out or whatever. And so she is having this conversation with him. She's about to leave, but she knows that it's going to hurt him and it's going to make him angry. And she's worried about what he will do in that situation, which is normal to be worried. Because even without the threat, even if he's never said, I'm going to kill you or I'm going to do this or that, when you see someone that adamant and that locked in on needing power and control and that volatile, it's natural for victims to have some ideas about what they might be capable of, right? It doesn't take much of an imagination to start to think about murder, or he's a public figure, he could speak out against her and ruin her or something, or sue her, who knows? So you start to worry about that. Maybe he's even done things like that, I don't know. So then you're thinking, well, I need to draw a boundary, but I need him to at least not be too angry. How can I manage that? So in the midst of this very difficult conversation, she starts to say, I love you. Okay, I love you. I do. I think as a way to try to soften it, because she wants to leave, maybe the relationship also, but she also doesn't want him to seek retribution against her. That's often the case. Now, I don't know. I'm speculating. I'm inserting a lot of thoughts into her head. It's possible that she just had an upwelling of love for him in that moment, which I'm guessing is not true. I'm guessing this is a strategy that she has.
Discipline and respect. You said, then we're at an impasse.
Stephen, no, we are at an impasse, okay? I love you, but Stephen, your abuse is sick.
Right, and it precedes this next thing. Your abuse is sick. I love you, but your abuse is sick. I think because she was planning on saying your abuse is sick, but then she thought, well, I need to soften the blow with this right up front, because I know from previous experience that if I just tell him this, he's really going to lose it. And so he likes it when I am, because it is a bit of a submissive. In the midst of all this, because he's certainly not being very affectionate, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. It's a little bit of a submissive statement, maybe because she knows that's what he's looking for, but she also follows it with, you're abusive.
Watch it. Watch it. Fucking watch it.
I'm gonna let go. I'll get what you need me to get.
More threats. Watch it. Just a I'm laughing because I don't know what else to do. It's awful. Watch what? Watch what? I'm going to take a guess and say that she knows what he's threatening. The dog seems to be alerted to this. But anyway, so she's now saying, I'm going to let that go. I think because she's like, I could say something to that. I could say, like, that's some serious BS, but I'm going to let that go because I need to go somewhere, I think. And she says, I need some space.
Fucking watch it.
I'm going to let go. I'll get what you need me to get. And I need some space. You need to just stop engaging for a little bit. Okay? I love you.
So again, She, I think, knows that if she says those kinds of things, it'll calm him down because it has the feeling of submissiveness, right? I mean, it also could be that she does love him and is trying to soothe him a little bit. It's not a bad thing in the midst of an argument to say, hey, you know, I love you, but even if there's no abuse happening. So it could be something, I don't know. I don't want to see things through a particular lens. But so she's trying to get away right now. And I think she's worried that if she just bolts, that he'll escalate. And when she gets back, it'll be really terrible. She's like, don't do anything while I'm gone.
But you need me again. And I need some space. You need to just talk and baby for a little bit. Okay? I love you. I love you very much.
I don't love you. That's the big problem. I've never received love from you. And
there's no rationalizing with someone like this. She's saying some pretty important things, that she wants space, that she loves him, but she wants some space, and they're at an impasse. And he just ignores it because he's not in power yet. He's not in control. And we saw this with Amaranth in that video as well. Amaranth, if you don't remember, was a woman that creates content on the internet, and she recorded a conversation on the phone with her husband, I believe, who was extensively being verbally abusive, allegedly. In this video, we're seeing a similar tactic. If you remember from the Amaranth video, once the abusive husband started to realize that he was really starting to lose control of his wife, then he started to resort to a softer tactic. And I think that's what we're seeing now, because she's saying some pretty definitive things. I love you, but I need some space and I'm leaving. And then he says, well, I don't love you because you've never shown me any kind of love. So I interpret that as a softer version of his power and control tactic, because it's trying to pull on her heartstrings. It probably has worked in the past where she would be like, oh, what are you talking about? No, I love you. And what? No, no. And he's trying to, now that also could be a more vulnerable statement that can actually be, I wouldn't be surprised if he actually feels that way right now. He thinks he's opening up at this point. Instead of talking about respect and men are being superior, he's like, you've never loved me. By implication, he is hurt that she's never loved him. Now, I doubt that that's true, but he, given his attachment and security, given his upbringing, he might actually feel that way. And that's where a lot of his vindictiveness might actually generate from, is this very sure feeling that she has never loved him. But it's often a transference or a displacement from his childhood, where someone didn't give him enough love, one of his parents or something like that. But it's interesting, yeah. So I think he's changing his tactic to try to get her. He can't control her if she disengages. He can't control her if she leaves. He has to try anything possible to at least keep the connection going, keep the conversation going. And then if she gives in here, which I wouldn't recommend, then eventually he'll start to engage in the more aggressive power and control conversation. But there's this dip right now because he's like, oh, actually, she's going to leave. I better try a different, more softer tactic.
You need to just stop engaging for a little bit, okay? I love you. I love you very much.
I don't love you. That's the big problem. I've never received love from you. And the fact is, when I go, look, I need you to do A, B, C, and D, just be disciplined about it, you go, no. But I love you more than life itself. Okay.
Put on some gloves. I'm not sure what that means, but yeah, it's interesting because it happened pretty quickly. I'm always interpreting things, so I don't know if I'm right, but I think even in that little series of sentences, he starts off more vulnerable in it with a different tact, but then transitions very quickly back into the discipline talk and the respect talk.
That's not fair. That's not fair, and it's disingenuous. Hillary, you're right. Right in past. Become someone, as you did, day in and day out, worthy of a wife worthy.
Yeah, it's more rhetoric regarding superiority of men, and that women have a duty to be submissive or to do what their husband says. I can't know that for sure. It certainly sounds that way. I mean, we're not hearing him lay out his bullet points regarding what he means by this. I believe in his right-wing commentary, he does go into those sorts of things. Whenever I talk with men like this, I will ask them to give me their the bullet points, because with sexism, often it's just the surface statements. There's a lot of, you know, you'll hear politicians will use these kinds of phrases, right? Like traditional family values. And then when you actually ask the politician, what do you mean by that? What are you actually saying? What are you trying to communicate? Because if you hear enough right wingers actually invoke that phrase, you suspect and maybe know that what they really mean is make America great again, or we need to have where women are submissive, where everyone has their role, where men are in control, and men appeared to have self-esteem because they were in control of everything and everyone respected them. That's what they are actually saying, and they're communicating through, because traditional family values, that could be a lot of things. That could be a lot of really wonderful things. It could actually be a lot of horrible things, right? So you'll hear these phrases, and I'll drill down with these individuals, be like, okay, tell me what you mean. And you'll see them squirm because they know they're not supposed to believe or say what they want to say in support of that topic sentence. So they will squirm around it and say other kinds of things. And I'll say like, well, then why don't you just say that? Why are you using this vague phrase that could be interpreted a lot of different ways? So he's using that phraseology. What he, I think, really wants to say is, you are a woman and I'm a man and you need to be submissive to me because that is the natural order of things, because that's what me and all my misogynistic men have established. Haven't you read the newsletter that you are an idiot and I'm superior, I'm smarter, I'm better, I have a divine right to have everyone worship me all the time? Don't you understand that?
Hillary, you're right, Raven has. Become someone, as you may be, day in and day out, worthy of a wife. Worthy? No, not as a wife. I didn't say as a wife. Hillary, come on now.
I'm not going to engage anymore.
More signs that she has been down this road many, many times. She's talked with her support system, maybe a therapist, and she uses words like impasse, I'm not going to engage, I'm going to go. And I was worried she was going to engage because he had stopped her and she was listening and he was lecturing her about, listen to me. He says, listen to me. And he starts to ramble and lecture. It definitely has that abusive lecture tone to it, right? Where he's just telling her how it is and not having a conversation. And she's been down this road many times where, I'm just going to take a guess, where he will have a 3-hour lecture that he will subject her to, where he's talking about all the things that just randomly come to his head. Again, it's not the content of the lecture. It's, I am yammering and being aggressive and speaking to you from authority and you are listening. That makes me feel okay because power equals attachment and security. And if I don't have power over you, it's a very scary, very threatening world to me. And I'm terrified. I'm a very terrified little boy. And the only way I can have any kind of happiness in life or safety is if you are totally under my control. Anyway, so she says, I'm not going to engage because I'm thinking, she's been down this road so many times, and she resolved in her mind, she's like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to listen to him lecture to me like he always does.
I'm
going to
go. I'll get you what you need.
But then as she's leaving, she has to accommodate because she's terrified that if she doesn't calm him down, then it'll be even worse. Physical abuse, I don't know. But she stops. She's like, yeah, text me what you need, and we're good. I'll still do what I can, but I am leaving, which I don't blame her for. I'm role playing it in a way that might appear mocking. It is not. She's in an impossible situation. There are several evils that she has to pick the lesser of, and she's trying to figure out how to get out of the house, maybe even divorce him in a way that causes the least amount of harm and abuse to her.
I'll get you what you need. I love you. I'm committed to you.
Right. She's doing everything she can. She's trying to draw a boundary. I'm not going to be abused anymore. I'm not going to engage. We're at an impasse. I've been here before. And I don't want you to escalate this. I don't want you to use this as an excuse to abuse me even more. I'm taking a big leap right now that I haven't done in the past. I'm just walking out and, you know, hey, we're still on the same page. I'm still going to help you out and I love you. I'm committed to you. So I wonder what that statement is where she's saying, I'm committed to you. that seems to be like maybe she intuits that if he is under the impression that she's going to leave him in the marriage, then he'll really escalate or something. So she's trying to reassure him, I'm committed to you. I'm not going to divorce you.
Are you committed enough to do those things?
I'm not going to.
Are you committed enough to do those things? You're not committed to anything.
So put on gloves. I'm not sure. Is that some sort of housework thing? What she's waiting for is for him to be like, fine, go. Or, okay, see you later. Or I'll text you later. You know, just some indication that as she's leaving, he's not going to escalate or that it's less likely. But he's not going to give that up. He knows that that is power. He knows that's what she's looking for. At least he intuits. And so he tries another thing. Okay, are you going to put on this glove? It's probably some sort of chore at the house. So are you going to put on the gloves? Are you at least going to do that? Because in his mind, he's like, I'm trying whatever I can to keep this conversation going so that I can continue to yammer and lecture her, because it's worked in the past when I did that. And I saw that when I was a kid. It worked with my parents or wherever this was modeled to him. And so that's my only road to happiness. That's the only road for our relationship to actually be salvaged. I'm desperate for that. I'm terrified. This is driven by terror. Make no mistake about it. They don't look afraid, but they are terrified. And when people are terrified, they will do a lot of different things. So we don't have to have sympathy for that. I don't have any sympathy for it. You can be terrified. You can't be abusive. Come on. So he is trying whatever he can. So I think he's saying, hey, okay, what about this chore thing? And then she'll stay for that, right? And then I can continue to badger her, and then maybe we can get back there. But if she leaves, I'm really scared of that.
I'm not
committed enough to do those things? You're not committed to anything.
And then he uses her word committed, because she just said, look, I'm committed to you. And then he says, look, you're not committed to anything. Grasping whatever he can. It's abusive. It's annoying. It's coercive. It's disrespectful. Isn't it interesting that he keeps talking about respect and he's the one being disrespectful?
You just said I love you. I'm committed to that. Walk the dogs, put on some gloves. Walk the dogs, put on some gloves. Are you committed enough to do those things?
So again, he's using her words, trying to use anything he can to get her to stay, to control her. And he's talking about gloves and walking the dogs. So maybe the gloves have something to do with walking the dogs.
Are you committed enough to do it?
And isn't it interesting, you could draw a parallel with Amaranth as well, that Amaranth's husband appeared to be using the dogs as a triangulated third to control Amaranth. And maybe he's doing that too, because he knows, I'm guessing, that she loves the dog and or dogs and will do anything for them. And so he's like, hey, you know, you're committed. You need to do this. You need to stay here so I can continue to lecture you. And I'm thinking that's what's happening, because he knows that she will have a hard time refusing her care of the dogs.
I'm going to just walk the dogs, put on some gloves. Are you committed enough to get the medication the dogs? Don't you take that in?
Oh, medication. So I wonder if the gloves has to do with, because sometimes when you administer medication to a dog, either, you know, from behind or on the ear, the medication will go through the skin. And so you can't have the medication go through your skin. So you wear gloves as you're administering it. Was that what he's talking about? I don't know. Okay, and then I believe Yasher Ali included the following. As the Crowders head inside, Stephen gets angry and angrier, and by his own admission screams, I will F you up, at his pregnant wife, Hillary, who then flees their home. I will F you up. Yeah, so the watch it lines that he was saying, and his tonality and his badgering. And then we hear this statement. I don't know if we're going to see that, but it sounds like we're not going to. That indicates potentially a pattern of abuse and an indication of a pattern of physical abuse. Okay, that's the end. Yeah, the Amaranth footage was much easier to analyze for me. There's a lot of questions here. Certainly, there seems to be some indication of a pattern of abuse from him. But as someone who does this kind of work, not only treatment-wise, but I also used to work as a forensic psychologist, and I know enough to say that there's often a lot of details that you can't tell from a video like this. So I can't tell. I can't make a strong assertion from what's happening here. So maybe we can see some follow-up journalism around this.
arguing with his wife that she should go pick up groceries, but she can't use his car, that what is her respect for the man? Like, what does she think about men?
Oh, so she wanted to go get groceries, and he wasn't letting her use his car. I don't know, that points in a direction, who knows, that she doesn't have a car, and he controls her by not allowing her to have her own car, I guess. I don't know. That's just a speculation. There's a lot of other explanations. She could have a car. Her car's in the shop or something.
Okay, so some piece of context there is that he says, put on gloves, and this is because he was asking her to give medicine to the dogs, and she was asking him to do that task because she's afraid the dog medicine might be toxic to her as a pregnant person.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad that context was given. I mean, I don't know the credibility of that claim, but that certainly fits with the data.
No, we have to make light of this because it's so egregious and disgusting, but I want to tell you more because Mondale hinted at it. Like, it does feel, although Hillary alleges otherwise, that there might be some physical abuse because Yasher Ali reports from his newsletter.
Okay, so according to the journalist, they're saying that Hillary has stated that Steven Crowder was not physically abusive to her. That's what it sounded like. And if that's true, yeah, it's hard to know. Could a victim say to the public that they're not being victimized as a way to try to manage the victimizer, the abusive person? Sure, that happens all the time, probably more times than not, honestly. So it's possible. But from what we saw, you know, I could see a scenario where he wasn't physically abusive, or he did put hands on, but she doesn't categorize it as physical abuse. I don't know. But we don't need physical abuse to justify labeling someone as an abusive individual. Verbal abuse, emotional abuse is rough. Some people will say having partners or parents who abuse them in various ways, verbally, emotionally, physically, they will report, sometimes, not always, that the physical abuse was the least of their worries because to be hit or beat was painful and rough, but at least you knew the parameters. You knew when it was going to end. You knew how bad it would typically get, and you would just take your lumps. It wasn't great, but it would be over at some point. But the verbal and emotional abuse gets under your skin, and it's just unrelenting, and it starts to brainwash you. It starts to make you feel like you're worthless. Of course, the physical abuse will make you feel worthless as well. But the ongoing verbal and emotional abuse, if you've ever been through it, you know that that can be extremely destructive, potentially for the rest of your life. You might need a lifetime of therapy to recover halfway from verbal and emotional abuse, and really all types of abuse. But my point is that we don't need to, and I feel like society does this sometimes. It's like, well, he's got to be physically abusive, right? Hillary, it sounds like she came forward and said that she wasn't. And then we're like, well, but no one acts like that if they're not physically abusive. And plus, I want to hate the guy, so I want to believe that he's physically abusive. You can still hate him for the verbal abuse and emotional abuse. You can absolutely dislike and judge someone and cancel someone, I suppose, for verbal and emotional abuse. It's not just verbal and just emotional abuse. It is unrelenting. It is damaging. It is not okay. It will break someone down. And if you've ever been through it, you know how horrible it is.
I believe his Substack, which is where this is reported, saying moments later off camera after this argument, Steven Crowder, by his admission, would lose control and scream at his pregnant wife in a threatening tone, "I will F you up," which is what led his wife to flee the home. However, neither Hillary nor Steven is contending that there was physical abuse in their marriage or sexual infidelity. And in audio files and text messages I reviewed, Steven Crowder admits to some of his faults, which include a volcanic temper. Sorry.
Yeah, abusive people will sometimes claim that they have an anger management problem or a temper. And usually they will admit to that when they feel like they can't get out of it and they have to admit to something. But that's not the way we frame it in our industry. In fact, I would assess people when they would come in having been committed of a crime of domestic violence, intimate partner violence. And we would actually find that a small minority would qualify for what we would call having a temper or an anger management problem, meaning that they didn't have the personality traits and the belief system that upheld an abusive behavior. In other words, there were two groups of people. There were people that would come in and we would say, yes, you need to go through the abusive perpetrator treatment, but a small group would be like, well, actually, you don't need that. You need anger management. So for the individuals that we would flag for abusive perpetrator treatment, these individuals had a personality such that they actually believed that abuse was okay. They had a belief system that said often it was men that I was treating. They had a belief system that men were superior and men were better and women were inferior, and it was okay for men under certain circumstances to beat their wives. So that's in their personality. It's in their bones. They believe that to be true. And they also have a personality such that they have high reactivity. Often these abusive individuals, they don't necessarily have a bad temper outside of their marriage. At work and in other situations, they're calm and cool as a cucumber. But when it comes to attachments, that's when they engage in the abusive behavior. Whereas a small minority of people would come into us having been convicted of abusing their partner, and we would find that they didn't have that belief system and they didn't have a pervasive personality trait or a set of traits that resulted in them being violent with their attachment with their partners. And so these individuals tended to have anger regulation problems in every circumstance, at work, with friends, with their partner, while they're driving on the street. They did have an emotional regulation problem. Sometimes it was PTSD, honestly. And so they didn't have to be re-educated. The people that would go through the domestic violence treatment, we had to re-educate them, to use a term of brainwash. We would have to unbrainwash them. We would have to change their personalities, the foundation of the way they looked at the world, the foundation of how they approached attachments, the foundation of how they saw themselves and men and women. All of that had to be unlearned, and then they had to relearn a new thing. That takes a lot of time and a lot of convincing. Whereas someone going through the anger management program, they didn't need that. They didn't need that re-education. They didn't need that unbrainwashing. It's like for the perpetrators, it was like trying to extract someone from a cult. They had been brainwashed into this way of thinking, and it took a lot of time for them to change their paradigm. The anger management folks, they didn't need that. They needed PTSD treatment or emotional regulation skills, and that would usually help. So for a lot of abusive people, when they're trying to minimize their abusive behavior and mindset, they will deny the fact that they have a personality trait or they've been brainwashed into a misogynistic point of view, and they will say, yeah, I just have an anger problem.
But look, his family has spoken out about this. And the reason, in my opinion, that they've been speaking out about this is because Steven Crowder had the audacity to openly talk about their divorce on his program in a way.
Okay, so it sounds like they did get divorced and he talked openly about the divorce, probably critical of Hillary.
That made it sound like there was no reason that his wife was seeking said divorce, right? And that it should, you know, for some reason she just wants out of it. And now we're flirting with, I don't know if you could call it defamation legally, but we're flirting with for sure a disparaging of character when he could have chosen to say nothing at all. So Hillary's family spoke out to Yasher Ali, this journalist, and said, quote, the truth is that Hillary spent years hiding Stephen's mentally and emotionally abusive behavior from her friends and family while she attempted to save their marriage. She was the one who was asking to work on their relationship to keep the marriage intact for their unborn children.
Okay, so the family of Hillary made a statement to the journalist that they're saying that Hillary spent years hiding Stephen's mentally and emotionally abusive behavior from friends and family while she attempted to save their marriage. Yeah, it's a very common story, and it fits with the narrative that I was saying earlier, that as she was starting to say, we're at an impasse, or I'm not going to engage. I'm guessing that when she got to that point, she actually did start to talk with other people. I don't know. Or she just knew from her own wisdom that it wasn't safe or it wasn't advisable to engage with him when he's being abusive. And so it fits with my narrative as well. When I was, you know, a very typical story is, you know, how I depicted how in the beginning, I was wondering if she's like, well, maybe it's me. Maybe he's just in a bad mood. Maybe he's stressed out from work. Maybe I can manage it. I don't want to out him to other people. I don't want to concern my family and friends. Maybe it's my fault. That's usually the mode that victims will go through in the beginning, maybe even for their entire lives. But then eventually, hopefully, they can emerge out of that, get support, start talking, and then either get treatment or leave the relationship.
In June of 2021, Steve left their home to pursue elective surgery. Hillary urged him to get the help he needed to address his abuse with the hope that their marriage could be saved and they could peacefully live together as a family. Instead, Stephen refused to do so and chose not to be with his wife during the birth of their twin children. There is more after the birth, which I guess he eventually got to. He bought a townhouse, left their home permanently. Hillary was unaware that Stephen had hired a divorce attorney and asked his assistant to cut Hillary off financially. There's significant documentation substantiating these facts.
Yeah, so financial abuse is a well-known phenomenon. When someone is abusive, they often will use whatever they can. And if they can use the finances as a way of abusing or controlling or getting back at someone, then they often will.
He's alleged that women who are under the thumb of a strong male who's just stay at home are happy. They love serving their husbands. Here he is in November of 2021, just months after this one particular fight on his show.
Every issue that you complain about, women, legitimately, and I am empathetic towards you. I have a white woman wife, just to be clear, hashtag white woman. I have a wife who's a stay-at-home mom now, and she used to be a professional. Though I have some experience with this, living with a woman and what it is that she has valued and where she has found herself happier. Take pride in your job, absolutely. But take pride in being a mother, too. Take pride in being a wife, too. Do you not want your husband to take pride in being...
So verbatim, in my view, you could say that there's nothing problematic with those kinds of statements. Like for me as a husband, I can say, I take pride in being a husband. I take pride in my role in my marriage. I take pride in knowing that I'm working on my marriage, trying to make it better, giving my wife the benefit of the doubt, doing a lot of things to try to make our marriage better. I take pride in that. And I would hope that my wife would do the same. I would hope that my wife, I can't even say it out loud because it's usually associated with what he is trying to say, what he's communicating. But I would hope that my wife would also try at our marriage. Let's just say that. But that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, I would hope that women would return to the way they used to be, or at least the way we think they used to be, which is the natural order of things. This is the central feature for a lot of conservatives, is to bring us back to the past, because they think that where we're headed and where we are now is this, you know, den of sin and horribleness. So this is usually the tagline for them. You know, 50 years ago, they would just say it outright. They would say, women need to be barefoot in the kitchen because that's the natural order of things. They have learned, the misogynists and the conservatives and folks like this, well, they know that they can't say that because even among other right-wingers, they will say, well, that's going too far. So they will tone it down, but the message is the same. They mean the same thing, but they use different words for it. This is true with racism. 50 years ago, they would just say, black people are stupid and criminals. Everyone understands that. Today, they will say things like thugs who will loot stores, or they'll use things like urban as a stand-in for black people, or inner city. Well, you know the inner city, they're all stupid and criminals. We all know that. They're using words that, code words that everyone understands what they're referring to, but they're evading a direct link to racism. But it's clear that they're being racist, right? So this is the phraseology of the modern sexist.
Where she has found herself happier. Take pride in your job, absolutely. But take pride in being a mother, too. Take pride in being a wife, too. Do you not want your husband to take pride in being a good husband, being a faithful husband, being a loving husband?
But of course, if you ask his wife, she would say, what do you mean by pride? And these are the debates I would get into with misogynists in my office. I'd say, okay, let's not use the word pride. What do you mean by pride? Tell me the bullet points. What would indicate pride? I'm guessing he would say like, well, you're dedicated to your spouse. You will do what you can to make them happy. And I'd say, okay, yeah, that sounds good. So that's what you're wanting her to do. Yes, that's what I want her to do. Okay, are you doing that for her? Is that also part of the taking pride in one's marriage? Because I'm guessing the wife would say, I have bent over backwards for a long time to make him happy. I have put myself aside many, many times. One could argue I do it every day. He never does that. Okay. So if we're talking about both people having, but the language that, now I can't say that because it's evasive language. So verbatim wise, there's nothing wrong with what he's saying. Like I was saying earlier, I take pride in being a husband. I hope my wife takes, when I say it out loud, it sounds sexist. When I say it about my wife, when I say it about myself, it doesn't say, so I'm not even going to say it. I just hope we both are dedicated to our relationship. I hope we both try to make this thing work. Even that sounds sexist because it's sort of in line with, anyway. But everyone knows, especially his audience, given all the things, all the rhetoric that he says, that what he's saying is, I would hope that women would serve their husbands like the natural order of things, like the things, the way things used to be, because that's the way things should be. She should be getting me a beer from the fridge, and when I arrive at home, she should run to me and kiss me, and when I'm upset, she should listen to me lecture to her for 3 hours.
In your job, absolutely. But take pride in being a mother, too. Take pride in being a wife, too. Do you not want your husband to take pride in being a good husband, being a faithful husband, being a loving husband? The qualities that you admire in a man? Take pride in being a wife and a mother, not just a career. You can take pride in either or, but generally speaking, not both. You can't have it all.
Okay. You can't take what? You can't take pride in work and your family and your husband? Like, you can't. So, well, you work, so, well, yeah, it's twisted. I'm looking for logic where there obviously is none.
Absolutely. But take pride in being a mother, too. Take pride in being a wife, too. Do you not want your husband to take pride in being a good husband, being a faithful husband, being a loving husband? The qualities that you admire in a man? Take pride in being a wife and a mother, not just a career. You can take pride in either or, but generally speaking, not both.
Yeah. Yeah, the twisted logic. It makes zero sense. You can't take pride. And again, that word pride doesn't sound bad. This whole rhetorical exercise is a stand-in for she needs to serve me, bottom line. She doesn't even need to serve my kids. She needs to serve me because I need her to do whatever I say because I only feel safe when she is submissive to me.
You can't have it all.
I can't say what I want to say without this entire...
All right. Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Everyone out there, please take care of yourself because you deserve it. You really, really do.